Hello, and welcome to Open Source Sex. My name is Violet Blue. I'm an author, podcaster, and columnist. You can find out more about me at violetblue.org. And you can find more of this podcast, including the really dirty bits that don't end up on iTunes, at opensourcesex.org. Tonight, I'm reading a story that is not sex-related, so if you tune into this podcast for the sex, come back later. Tonight, I'm reading a story about zombies. And the reason I'm reading a story about zombies is because Thomas Roche, who is a very accomplished writer and novelist, just published, well, actually his publisher just published his novel, The Panama Laugh, which is one of the best books, one of the best zombie novels I've ever read, and it's amazing. First of all, I will say that it is a motherfucker of a novel, and it just picks you up by the scruff of your neck in the beginning and just drags you through the whole story, and it's incredible. The other thing I want to tell you about The Panama Laugh, which you can find on Amazon, etc., etc., is that it... Okay, I am a San Francisco native. I was raised here in the city. And all my life, I always wondered what was inside the San Francisco Armory, which is this giant building. It's just this fortress. It's literally a military fortress from the turn of the century. And recently, the kinky studio, kink.com, bought it and turned it into their own sort of private movie and porn production studio. And a while back, Thomas, who's a longtime writing partner of mine and a very, very close friend, he used to work there. And he was their marketing copywriter for a long time. And so I would go meet Thomas for lunch. And, you know, I'd go there and there would be dominatrixes walking down the hall naked and the sound of people getting spanked and screaming and stuff like that and all kinds of crazy, awesome stuff going on. And we would talk about what happened if the zombie uprising happened and where you would go. And we pretty much concluded that the armory was the place to go during a zombie uprising, one way or another. And so it's interesting that in The Panama Laugh, at the end of the book, the sort of denouement of the novel happens in the armory, which is a fully secure military fortress. So if you pick up a copy of The Panama Laugh, you can absolutely be assured that it's whips, chains, and delicious, delicious brains by the ending. So it's super fun. The story I'm going to read is actually a story that I just read tonight at the book launch party for The Panama Laugh here in San Francisco. And the first time I read it was at 6 o'clock this evening, and I just read it on the computer, and then the second time I read it was actually reading it out loud tonight at about, I guess, 10 o'clock p.m. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, by the way, on Wednesday here in the city. But yeah, the second time I actually read it was I read it live to the audience for the reading, and it was written specifically for me. And what you need to know is that, as I said, I grew up here in San Francisco, and I come from a pretty broken home. You probably don't know that much about me, but I ran away from home when I was 13 years old, right before I turned 14, and I lived on the streets until I was 17 and a half. So I was a homeless street punk, basically, for quite a long time. And here in the city, I slept on rooftops in abandoned cars, I slept at people's houses, I slept at the beach, I slept in the park, I begged for food, I got really good at stealing, I did everything but sex work just to get by, and it was pretty intense. I have attempted a couple of times to write an autobiography, and I got the draft of it done, and my agent hated the title, but they loved the story, so I wasn't really sure what to do with it. I've just got it sitting on my computer, but Thomas read it for me, and he really liked it, and he said that after he read my draft of my autobiography, that he got the idea to write this particular story, which is really quite an honor and pretty surprising. Anyway, I'm not going to bore you with too many more details. I'm just going to read the story for you, because I think it's pretty fucking awesome. This story, it's by Thomas S. Roche. It's called St. John of the Throwdown. I slept in a sewer pipe south of Ocean Beach. I've been on my own for 2 years now, and I've slept in a lot of pretty crappy places. If you think a sewer pipe south of Ocean Beach is the worst of them, then I guess you don't get what I mean when I say on my own. I was 13 when I left, and I'm 15 now. If I can make it another year, I can petition for emancipation, but if I screw it before then, beyond a certain point, it means I'm pretty much fucked unless I decide to dig foster programs or juvie hall. Killing a bunch of people seems like it qualifies as screwing up. The night before it happened, I was trying to avoid Spike and Sarah, this crazy Burning Man couple who is always trying to have a threesome with me. They pretend to be goths, but they're really hippies of the get stoned and hot tub variety. Except they've lived on the road for something like 5 years now, so at this point they're doused in enough hair products and alkali dust that I doubt anyone with a hot tub would let Spike and Sarah anywhere near it. They were looking for me in Alamo Square so we could hang out. Hang out meant smoking pot in their Dodge van conversion with Jack Skellington on the side, so they could tell me how long and silky my hair would be if I grew it, and maybe straying into a discussion of whether I had any tattoos in interesting places. If it sounds like sleeping in a van would be awesome comparing to sleeping in a sewer pipe, you've never dodged gropey hands while baked off your ass. I'd rather get a good night's sleep in a sewer pipe than get abortively felt up by wannabe Buffy extras. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Look, just to make things clear, this thing I sleep in sometimes is not a shit pipe. It's an overflow pipe. It's part of the storm system. That's why it opens right on the beach rather than out in the water the way actual sewage pipes do. That's why it's fenced off, which means no one really watches it. The pipe only starts spewing shit if San Francisco's whole storm drain system gets overloaded, like in the case of a major rainstorm. So it's not like there's water flowing through it, but there's always a salt spray coming in from the waves. That means it's impossible to keep things dry. It's fenced off, and you have to climb down an access ladder that's locked. Bobby pins are your friend, though it's been a damn long time since I had hair long enough to really need them for anything other than opening locks. I keep my hair short and my temper shorter, because if you act like a girl, you get treated like one, and if you act like people can fuck with you, there's always someone waiting to do it. That's why I sleep with my Bible. I'm very fond of Revelation, actually. Which is convenient, since it's the only chapter actually left in the book. You can get robbed pretty easy, and keeping anything critical in your bag is a terrible idea. But if there's one thing nobody ever wants to look through, it's somebody else's Bible. Which is kind of good, because if they opened mine, they'd get a surprise. Mine's packed full of the true meaning of charity. Like the frat boys did when they fucked with me, which I was pretty sure was going to be my very last fuck-up and adios emancipation. Turns out it wasn't. I hadn't gotten much sleep, what with the salt spray and chill. It had started out a pretty awesome night. I got some alone time, but didn't feel lonely. And I've always liked beaches. I like the sound of the waves and the smell of the salt, even tucked inside an overflow pipe. But I wasn't very deep into the night before I started getting cold as hell and wishing I had a way to warm up. I fell asleep, but I kept waking up. I had this digital watch I'd lifted from Walgreens the day before. It said 4 a.m. the last time I looked at it. I woke up to laughing. It was distant, mingling with the sound of the waves. Someone was coming down the beach. Several someones, it sounded like. When you're in my situation, other people's laughing isn't always good news. Sometimes it means you're about to be fucked with. On the other hand, sometimes it means someone else is about to be fucked with, which can be good news or bad. But the whole point of this beach and this cove and this drainage pipe was that there wasn't anybody else to be fucked with. And there wasn't supposed to be anybody to fuck with me either, but it looked like that part wasn't working out. My little digital watch told me it was 6:30 a.m. I was groggy and pissed, so I moved fast. I never unpack all the way unless I know I'll have time to repack, which at this point hasn't happened in months. So it only took me a minute or so to wrap my damp roll and get it strapped to my pack. I shrugged the backpack on and wished the frame wasn't so big. I got it from this ex-boyfriend, who stole it from this guy he knew who was way bigger than me. But believe me, once you've walked from Ocean Beach to Upper Haight for soup from the Hare Krishnas, you're glad just to have a frame. It redistributes the weight and shit. You'd be amazed at how much of a difference it makes. I crouched low in the pipe and waddled forward. I jumped the 3 feet to the beach and stumbled under the weight of my pack. The sun was bright. It almost blinded me. There was haze over the water. It made things glary. I saw the frat boys coming for me. Well, they weren't coming for me. They were just coming. How they'd got down here, I didn't know. It had been a pain in the ass for me. But they weren't weighted down with packs like I was. There were 8 of them. They had like Berkeley sweatshirts and Linkin Park t-shirts and long shorts and chin beards and baseball caps. They were laughing and smacking each other, punching each other, saying, "Dude," and lumbering down the beach toward me. That Beavis and Butthead frat boy laughter makes my blood run cold. I get fucked with enough by college boys that when the laughing starts up, I'm just glad that it's not directed at me. These were grade-A douchebags and fucked up on Everclear or fucking lighter fluid or something. They were stumbling all over the place. One had even puked all over himself, green shit running all over his t-shirt. But he still had this big grin on his face, and he kept laughing and saying, "Dude!" As they came closer, I figured out how they got down the hillside, which would have required jumping the fence and down the access ladder that I'd locked behind me. It looked like they crashed or smashed their way through the fence and had taken some scrapes on the way. They were cut all over their arms and faces. And they hadn't bothered with the ladder. It looked like they just jumped. In fact, one guy had fucked up his leg. It almost looked like he'd broken it down by his shin. It wasn't right, and there was blood all over it. It looked all wrong, but he was walking anyway, limping, yeah, but walking. I could almost have sworn I saw bones sticking out of his skin, but at that distance, maybe it was just gravel and sand and shit. It was ugly. He was ugly. His friends were ugly. That laughing was uglier. They kept smacking each other and saying, "Dude," as they came down the beach at me. They hadn't seen me yet. I started to back up. I thought maybe if I could get back to the drainage pipe, I could hide and they'd never notice me. But they were coming right toward me and right toward the pipe. So I guess I panicked a little, just staring at them. These guys were really fucked up. They kept punching each other on the arm and grabbing each other's asses and going, "Ha, dude, ha, dude," as if it was a fucking mating call. And then this one guy, this skinny, freaky-looking one with bad skin, jumped this other one, way bigger than him, and slammed him down onto the sand. He planted what I thought was a kiss on the big one's mouth. Other than the one who was doing the kissing, they all kind of circled, really drunk, just laughing, going, "Ha, dude." So I thought, okay, are these not frat fuckers at all? Are these young queer dudes from the Castro, like, guys with some college boy fetish? That would be okay. I mean, those guys aren't bad if you don't mind Lady Gaga. But they weren't queer, because the others started pushing and shoving each other. That was bad news. I didn't know if they were really frat boys or what, but whatever was going on, something was fucked up about them. Something way more fucked up than their just being drunk off their asses enough to jump down like a 40-foot ledge onto the beach, and for one of them to get up and walk on what looked more and more like a compound fracture. Then the one who had jumped the other one and started kissing him got up, laughing with his mouth full of stuff. Stuff. I didn't know what at first. It took me a minute to figure. It was part of the other guy's face. The one on the sand, sprawled out with his shorts half off, had his face smeared and open. Something had been ripped. His lower lip was gone. I could see his face. And he still kept laughing. "Dude, dude, dude." Look, I don't scream except for help. I didn't scream this time. I felt pretty badass for not screaming. I just turned and ran. Running with a giant backpack sounds easier than it is. It was more like a stumble. To make it easier to run faster, I grabbed the straps as I ran and cinched them up tight, really tight. When you're in my situation, you don't want to lose your shit, and I really didn't want to lose my shit, not because of a bunch of drunk-ass frat boys high on PCP. I got to the edge of the drain pipe. When I looked back, they were all sort of circling each other and smacking each other on the arm. The one with no lower lip was up and circling with the rest of them. He was still laughing. "Dude," even though blood and stuff was running down his chin and soaking his t-shirt. I saw the one who'd bitten his face off stumbling around with the rest of them, and he just hawked and spat out what he'd bitten off. I guess it didn't taste good? Then he went back to laughing, over and over again. "Dude, dude." Even the one with his leg broken was laughing, and he was close enough now for me to see that, yeah, his leg was really broken. Really broken, not some hairline fracture. What I thought I'd seen was exactly what I'd seen. It wasn't a scraped-up knee with chunks of gravel sticking out. It was this big flap of skin, torn off from the front of the guy's shin, and bones were sticking out. I fucking freaked out. But I still didn't scream. I shrank back into the dark of the drain pipe. I crouched there with my Bible. I shook and hyperventilated and freaked out. I got that sparkly feeling in my head and in my fingers. I heard the laughing coming closer. I saw more stars in my vision. I thought, what the fuck is with those guys, PCP? I saw those dumbass videos like the rest of you. I didn't make it far enough in high school to have health and safety, so I never got the pleasure of seeing those car crash videos in class. But my 8th grade had a unit on how every drug known to man would turn you into a streetwalking dope fiend or a screaming murderous cannibal from just one dose. And yeah, I know PCP doesn't do that, but what the fuck else was I supposed to think? I'd just seen one guy eat half another guy's face. What the fuck was I supposed to think? What I thought was, that laughing is getting louder. What I thought was, that laughing is getting closer. What I thought was, they're coming after me. I decided it was time to read a little Revelation. How many times have I opened up a can of Revelation and not had to use it? How many times has old St. John given me strength without the need to resort to violence? How many times has just having St. John there to comfort me helped me figure out what to do? When you're in my situation, the Bible can be a hell of a comfort. And no, I'm not a Jesus freak. If you really want to know, I was raised Christian Scientist, but only for about a year. Before that had been Vedanta, Zen Buddhism, and the Living Love Fellowship. After my mom's Christian Science phase, there were the Disciples of Lemuria and some sort of Kabbalist Judaism that I was never all that clear on. The Bible was a project I did in freshman art class. It was one of about 8 useful things I took with me when I left, because it was an excellent place to stash probably the most important of the other 7, which wasn't the 2 pairs of clean underwear, 1 bra, or the roll of $87. It was the gift my mother's old boyfriend, Zach, a corrupt Lake County Sheriff's deputy, had given her. It was a .38 special revolver, grip, hammer, and trigger, wrapped with a cloth tape, tattered with age and printed with backwards Bible verses. It was a throwdown piece, its serial numbers filed off and its grooves worked on in some police lab, so that its bullets would take on an unusual twist and be harder to identify as having come from this gun. The cloth tape was there because it wouldn't take fingerprints. Zach loved to brag about this sort of thing, trying to impress me. He said, "When you realize you just accidentally shot someone for pointing a banana at you, you don't have time to get out your hanky and wipe a gun down. This makes it easy. No prints. No one can tell who was holding it when the trigger got pulled." Zach was a cautious deputy, which is probably why when he brought this thing over to show me, he got so drunk he forgot he'd brought it. I stash it in my secret Bible just in case I ever needed to find religion. Hey, in my situation, weirder things have happened. In 2 years of traveling around with me migrating from deep in my backpack to the pocket of my cargo pants to under whatever pillow passed for a pillow on a particular night, it, the once white cloth tape, had gone gray and sucked up snatches of the word backwards. In 2 years, I'd gotten good at reading backwards. It read, "Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending, what is and what was, and what is to come." I hauled St. John out of his prison and pulled back the hammer. The frat boys were limping through the entrance to the drainpipe. They were nothing but silhouettes against the glare-lit gray of the fog. "Hold it! Hold it! I'm armed!" That's what Zach had told me to say if I ever had to. In 2 years, I had to, but not very often. It always worked pretty damn well. But not this morning. They got sight of me and started howling, chortling, guffawing. They started lumbering. "Dude! Dude! Dude!" They were worse than I'd thought. They were on something bad. They were bloody. Their skin was torn. Bones protruded from more than just the guy's shin. His fingernails were broken off. The one with his lip bitten off was missing some teeth. They hung from what had to be strips of his gums and flesh. Something gooey green dripped from them. They all came at me, 8 of them. 8. Calling out like chirping birds, "Dude, ha ha, dude, ha ha." I said, "Oh shit, oh shit, I'm armed, I'm armed, I said I'm fucking armed." It didn't work this time, they came at me fast. St. John said, "Bang," and it was Judgment Day. There were 8 of them, 8. That's 2 more than I had bullets in the gun. That's bad. The first shot went in through the closest guy's face, right about the nose. He was the one who'd puked green slime all over himself. I was just relieved the gun went off when I pulled the trigger. 2 years of riding around in my pants getting Bible verses rubbed off on it didn't seem like the best environment for a gun. But then, I'd never had to actually fire it before. Whatever was in the frat boy's brain that had made him say dude and laugh all the time, It was now all over the faces of, like, four of his friends, which they thought was hilarious. They went, ha-ha-ha, dude. I could barely hear them. My ears were ringing from the big bang in that close space. I was almost deaf. They kept coming for me, laughing. I did some more preaching. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I was running through the cloud of smoke and brains. I made it through the cloud of smoke and blood and frat boys, smelling the stink of their bells and their rot. I ran like hell for the mouth of the pipe. They were right behind me, lumbering. It's about 5 feet down the rocks from the pipe to the beach. My shoplifted jungle boots hit the sand hard. The weight of my backpack pitched me forward. My knees hit the sand, and my lungs emptied. The revolver went skidding off into wet sand. There were four more laughers coming close behind me. In 6 shots, I'd got 4 of them. 4 more were still after me. I tried to get up, but my pack had been getting heavy. I'd been accumulating stuff, hoarding, stolen junk, discarded clothes, shit I thought I could trade, things I wanted, just wanted, always thinking there'd be a place to put it someday. It held me down as the laughers came for me. I had my Bible in my left hand. There were 6 more bullets taped along the interior rim of the hollow. I clawed them out and tried to crawl forward, squirming and trying to get my backpack off. I had pulled the straps tight. I had pulled them really tight. It's the only way to run with that big a backpack on. I couldn't get it off fast enough. I was fucked. I made it to the gun and plucked it out of the wet sand. I popped the cylinder the way Zack had showed me and scattered the empty brass cartridges along the sand as the waves came in and doused me. I thought, fuck, 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 those fucking brass things have my fucking fingerprints on them. Then I dropped the Bible as I palmed the 6 fresh ones and thought, that fucking Bible has my fingerprints too. The waves hit hard and washed the empty brass away. The Bible got soaked. I tried to crawl as I loaded. It didn't work. I panicked. They were close. The laughing frat boys came at me, slipping in the sand and belching, dude! I couldn't get my arms to work well enough to load the revolver with the backpack on me. I wrenched my shoulder getting out of it. I tried to do it all at once and fumbled bullets. They scattered in the sand. The waves washed over them. I lost it. I lost it. I screamed. I don't scream, but I did. I don't scream unless I need help and want help and think that help might be coming. In my situation, those 3 things don't coincide very often. I made it out of my backpack and reached into the waves and found 1 bullet. 1. With the cylinder open, I rolled on my back, and that's when I saw how close the frat boys were. Fucking close. We're talking inches. I had 1 bullet in the gun and I had to make it count, but it didn't matter how much it counted because there were 4 coming at me, 3 behind the 1, maybe 10 feet behind. But this one right in front of me was close, and he was the one who'd had his lip bitten off. Even just seeing him made me scream. He was 3 feet away. I snapped the cylinder closed and twisted it, and would have prayed I got it in the right place if all my prayers hadn't already been rubbed off in the white cloth tape on the butt of the pistol. So I didn't say anything. I just aimed and pulled the trigger. Newlip's brain went back in a cone. It caused a red skyward spray in the foggy morning and doused his friends. They thought it was a riot. I scrambled to get up and slipped in the wet sand. Waves hit me. I shoved myself off my soaked backpack and tried to crab crawl away so I could feel for bullets in the sand and the water. I found a couple and fumbled them. I fumbled more. I screamed again as the 3 frat boys came for me at once. Then there was a chirp and a crack and a buzzsaw sound, and 6 or 8 more cracks, all one after the other. Frat boys' heads exploded. The frat boys dropped. Smoke rolled over me. It stank. I flipped over, got to my knees, opened the .38, started pumping wet sandy bullets into it without even thinking. My jaw dropped. There was a cop right behind me. A cop! I'd just blown some Berkeley student's head off with a stolen gun that was illegal to begin with, and a cop had watched it all? Not just a cop. He was a fucking SWAT team. He wore black fatigues and a black turtleneck under a bulletproof vest and yellow sunglasses, and what looked like a Bluetooth? He had big boots, and his fatigues were soaked to the knees. He had a gun on his right side, and a gun on his left side, and a taser on one thigh, and a billy club on the other, and in his hands was one of those SWAT team rifles stabbing a red laser beam out into the fog above my head. He was black, as in chocolate brown. And he wasn't alone. More cops crawled the beach in the distance, fog pirouetting around them. They had 1 guy on his knees, clutching his neck, screaming at them, "Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!" Well, 3 of the cops circled him, lasers swirling in fog all around him. More beyond. More lasers. I saw more bodies. The guy on his knees was a cop. He wore exactly what the other guys were wearing. He was screaming, "Fuck you, fuck you! I didn't do anything wrong! It's not my fault!" I saw one of those big rubber military boats parked on the beach. They looked like cops. Except, don't even SWAT team cops have badges and names on their chests? I dropped the revolver and put my hands up, waiting to be shot. But the cop didn't even look at me. He looked at what was left at the frat boys. He said, "Did they hurt you?" I said, "No, they were trying to, and that's why..." "No bite marks. You didn't get bitten?" "Bitten? No." "Then pick up your weapon." I said, "Huh?" He'd never taken his eye off the twitching bodies of the frat boys. He never stopped aiming his gun over my head at them. He walked right by me and went to the mass of three bodies. He flipped something on the side of his rifle. "Plug your ears, ma'am." My ears still hurt like hell. I heard everything like I had a pillow over my head. I didn't need to be told twice. I stuck my fingers in my ears. He put a shot in each of the frat boys' heads. They stopped twitching. He walked beyond them to the one I'd shot on the beach. No Lips wasn't twitching. The cop shot him anyway. Now that he was past me, I could see what was on the back of his vest. A big B logo, and beneath that, "Contractor, Bologna Industries." Down the beach, I heard, "Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you," and then there was a shot. Then another, two more, three more. The guy they'd had on his knees was now face down. The first cop, the black one, the one who had shot the three guys about to get me, looked at me. He said, "Pick up your weapon, ma'am. You have somewhere safe you can go, somewhere where the doors lock." "Yeah," I lied. "Go there. Now, lock the door. Don't leave till it's over." "Till what's over?" He looked at me with a sort of depressed expression. He put his rifle strap over his shoulder and reached in his pocket. He pulled out a little color booklet. There was a picture of Jesus on the front, and a prayer. It read, "And I looked, and behold a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him." The guy took off his yellow sunglasses and stuck them in the pocket of his vest. He shrugged and looked at me kind of sheepishly. He said, "Sorry, ma'am. It's in our contract. Good luck. Get that pistol loaded." He put his fingers together and gave an ear-splitting whistle and shouted, "Move out!" He and the other cops ran for the boat. They left the dead people on the beach. I gathered my bullets. I packed up my gun. I stuck it in my belt and strapped on my backpack. I left the Bible in the water. I had enough dead weight. I ran for the ladder. And that's the story. Short, almost too short. It's called St. John of the Throwdown, and it's by Thomas Roche. If you liked that story, or you liked any little part of that story, I highly recommend that you pick up a copy of his book, The Panama Laugh. It's available on Amazon in print version and on Kindle, and it's really fantastic. You can find out more about Thomas Roche if you just Google Thomas Roche. And thank you so much for listening tonight to a non-sex version of Open Source Sex. And you can find the sexy versions of Open Source Sex at opensourcesex.org. And hopefully in the meantime, you'll come hang out with me at violetblue.org and at violetblue on Twitter, where I spend a lot of my time. Thank you. Strumming.